This is Relationship, a podcast presenting a gay look at traditional relationships and values with your hosts, the Cotellis. I am Marco.
And I'm Tony.
A lovely, lovely day. Lovely day. Lovely day. Lovely day. You're not going to sing backup for me?
No, I'm definitely not.
Oh, you suck at life.
I'm excellent at life. I am, in fact, killing it.
Au contraire, mon frère.
Does your derriere need a little cush?
Oh, my God.
See, I sang backup for you there.
Yeah, well, you didn't sing it, but we're not going to go there. Anyways.
Speak, sing.
Howdy. How's it going?
Howdy, howdy,
What's
howdy.
What's happening? What's going on in your life?
Nothing, really. We're sliding into the end of the year, and I am ready to slip, slip, slide away.
How fun was Thanksgiving?
It was delightful.
I mean, right? Mm-hmm. All the food.
And the family.
And, yeah, that was fun.
And the friends.
I cooked.
You did.
Did you enjoy?
I enjoyed the small section of mac and cheese you put to the side for me that wasn't covered in the Bernie part.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did.
I'm kind of good at mac and cheese, huh?
You are.
I'm glad you enjoy my cooking.
I do. Rare as it is.
Ow. Damn, backhand. That ain't cute.
But it's true.
Oh, I just don't like cooking.
See, he's not denying it.
I just don't like it. I'll do it, but I like cooking for like groups of people. I don't really like cooking.
For me.
Just because it's a Tuesday. That's not cute.
Bitch.
I know. It's just boring and it's stressful. I get stressed out from cooking. That's another one of my problems.
Yeah, it's not a stressful situation.
It's super stressful.
You can't figure out how to time things. That's what I was just going to say. You can't figure out how to make everything come out at the same time.
No. Well, here's my thing is I have different standards for the way I want things to taste than you do. Like, for example, I don't like any of the meats that I cook to be hot. I don't like piping hot food. And so I don't need for things to be like super like hot and fresh off the oven like you do. So it's just different. I just don't like it because I'm like, ugh, it's just too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fun.
Uh-huh.
I'm bored.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell by this conversation?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Anyways, what else has been going on? That was a fun little drive back to the city, right?
It was with puppy and sister in tow.
I mean, we did our good little gay dad thing, right?
We did. It doesn't get much gayer dad than that.
I mean, oh my gosh. But we had so much fun with, you know, Stevie and Steven and...
And all the cousins and Aunt Mary and Uncle Chuck and yeah. My dad and my brother. It was a good time.
And your grandma and papa.
Yeah.
It was a good old time.
It was.
Yeow.
It's always nice seeing everybody.
It is. It is.
Mm-hmm. And it's also nice being back home.
For shizzle. I enjoy it all the mm-hmm. time. Yeah, and now we're like literally like rolling right into the holidays, right?
We are, which I think is a good introduction to a brief announcement we should make.
Oh, yeah? Well, please do it.
Yeah, so to tell our listeners that we're going to take a brief hiatus for the holidays.
Yeah, so December 5th is going to be our last episode of Relationship for the season.
Mm-hmm.
Season one, can you believe it?
It's amazing.
Oh my God.
Through a whole season, almost a full year.
We did it.
It's crazy.
So we are going to take a brief break during the holiday. During the holidays. So like during the December months. I won't, you know, specify Christmas because some of our listeners may not celebrate Christmas.
Correct.
And then we are going to be back. We haven't decided. It may
mid-January.
Be mid-January. It could be beginning of February. But we'll keep you all posted. So check us out on social media at PodRelationship. To find out when to listen to some new episodes, but it'll be just a brief break just to get through the holidays, gather your lives, and then
plan programming for the whole next year.
For sure. And God willing, we will end up having a better 2019 than we did 2018. And by, of course, I mean, you know, politically, because 2018 was a little bit of shit, especially with our commander and queef.
Ew.
I love that word so much, though. It's a fun word.
If you get to use that word, I get to say
no. You do not. That is definitely not.
Now I'm going to invite our listeners to write in and try and guess what that word was.
Don't even.
It's Marco's kryptonite.
But let's pray to the 6-pound, 9-ounce baby Jesus that things are better in 2019. Yeah.
I will pray to the holy Butterball.
Butterball? What do you mean Butterball? I didn't say 9 pounds, 6 ounces, because that would be a whole ass Butterball. That would definitely be a turkey.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord. You got to hit that T. Anywhoosies.
You got to hit that T.
What does that mean? I don't.
Me, Tony. Saying.
Oh, T. Well, I'll hit you definitely.
Ah, oh, damn it! You, that backfired.
Yeah, I was gonna say you definitely opened yourself up for that one. What say you? We hop into our hashtag gay relationship goals for the episode.
Hippity hop away.
As a reminder, every week Tony and I will pick a wonderful queer couple and highlight them as our hashtag gay relationship goals. Our hope is to bring these relationships to the forefront and give a sense of positivity and perspective to the gay relationship narrative. If you and your partner are interested in becoming our hashtag gay relationship goals, or if there is a queer relationship that you admire and would like to bring to our attention, please reach out to us. Tag us on some of these adorable couples' photos on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Our handle is @podrelationship. Tony and I will take a look at these photos and posts and could potentially highlight you and your partner on an episode of the podcast. This week, we are highlighting a couple that I'm kind of a fan of. I started following one of them, and then, of course, after doing my deep dive into Instagram, I started, you know, following all of their wonderful, lives and seeing things, and then noticed he was married and had an adorable son, and of course started, you know, daydreaming about the day when I could have the same. Of course, I'm talking about the wonderful Claiborne Elder. That is @ClaiborneElder on Instagram. I love Claiborne and his husband, Eric B. Rosen. That is @Eric, E-R-I-C, B. Rosen on Instagram. I love them. They're so cute, and they are fathers to baby Bo. And they're so much fun. Eric is a director, writer, producer. Of course, he's a husband. And of course, he's dad to baby Bo. And Claiborne is a Broadway actor. You guys may have seen him in a few roles, such as he was on The Carrie Diaries, R.I.P. I loved The Carrie Diaries.
You did.
It was such a good show, and I loved the books. But then in addition to that, he's been on Torch Song, in Torch Song on Broadway. But he is a fantastic actor and like everything that you would ever want and or dream of as far as a Broadway actor goes. He's kind of fantastical. I love it. They're just amazing. And they are literally aspirations on top of aspirations on top of aspirations, which is wonderful. I just like them so much.
They are delightful. And there's a myriad of great things we could talk about that just highlight how wonderful and incredible they are. But I'm just going to point out one. Just the one.
Oh, is that right? I don't know. Your sound's not up, so it doesn't count.
It's the best thing ever.
So Tony's excited because their baby farted on camera.
They captured the baby ripping the best baby fart ever. And it was ridiculous how they cracked up about it.
Well, babies are funny that way, right? Because they literally fart with, like, no apologies.
Reckless abandon. The way everyone should fart.
No, they just literally fart as if it's socially normal. And it's crazy because they usually have, like, diapers.
Hashtag farting is normal.
And they're usually sitting in a lap. So there's, like, a muffledness that takes place with a baby.
But also like a tunnel echo effect.
Sure. It's a weird thing, and I don't want to spend the rest of the time talking about farting, but
it was an epic fart that was hysterical.
I'm over this conversation at this point. So let's talk about how amazing Claiborne and Eric are. You guys should
I just
follow
did.
Them. That's not the extent to their amazingness.
It's enough for me.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. I just like them. They're just a wonderful couple. And, you know, sometimes I look at these wonderful, you know, Instagram pages and see these amazing people accomplishing all these amazing things in life. And then I see that they have things like children and careers and a love and a passion for one another. And it really challenges me to feel like I don't know, like I can accomplish that. It's one of those things, because every once in a while you sit back and you're like, how the fuck do they make that happen? And then you see it happen and you're like, oh, they're doing the damn thing right now and can do it, then I know that I can do it. And it's just wonderful. And it just makes me super happy. And I, you know, they have a baby, which I know is not something that you want. You are not baby
see me in a proof. Year and a half baby.
Yeah, I was gonna say you're not baby proof. You need like a 3-year-old.
No, like just like 10 minutes before they turn 2, I'm good.
I think even more than that, because you're still changing diapers at 2.
No, you're still changing diapers exactly. At 2. No.
So you need like a body trained 3-year-old, which is great. But yeah, they're just wonderful, and they inspire me. Like they make me want to like go next phases of life, because I know that like if I can see it happening in other gays, then I know that it can happen in this gay couple, right? It's kind of cool. So I think you guys will all fall in love with them just as much as we did. So definitely follow them on Instagram. Again, that is at Claiborne Elder. Claiborne is spelled Claiborne Elder, Elder. And then his hers bin is at Eric. That is Eric B. Rosen, Rosen. Follow them on Instagram. Tell them the Critelli sent you. We love them. Clearly they're based here in New York, so I kind of feel like we should all be friends. I'd like to be uncles to another baby. That would be kind of cool.
Especially if he farts.
No. That's when I give him away.
I'm here for it.
You're here for it until you start smelling it.
No, as long as I don't have to change the diaper, he can fart all he wants. I'll giggle.
That's not a good uncle. Anyways, so we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we are going to try to solve the world's problems, Critelli style.
Hi-ya!
Hey, folks. It's your favorite hosts, Tony.
And Marco.
We need to ask a favor. Please stop what you're doing this very moment and head to your favorite podcast directory and rate and review Relationship.
We know. It's a big ask, but we need your help in getting the word out about the podcast, and your reviews are the best ways to make that happen.
So if you have 2 minutes, please go and give us a 5-star rating.
Then write a review and tell everyone about how much you love our voices.
Or how we're your favorite hosts.
Or that this really important conversation is helping you along the way.
Just a few ideas, you know, in case you get writer's block.
Anyways, we appreciate your help and thank you for the support. Your participation will only make relationships better.
We're going to get back to the show now, but we love all of you.
Thanks.
And we are back. I know how much you love it when I say that.
Thrilled with it.
You just reminded me of Bruce Willis. Thrilled. Anyway, we're back. And this week we're going to talk about... So last week we talked about the younger generation and dating. This week we're going to talk about the older generation and dating.
The old fogies.
Not the old fogies, the previous generation. And where some of those traditions and some of those values come from, and sort of what it's like for us caught in the middle, and what it looks like, what it looked like for them. And after we have our conversation, we're going to talk with a couple of people who experienced it firsthand.
Sure.
So when you think of our previous generation, when you think of like our parents and their courting, what do you see?
It's funny because I think courting didn't exist in our parents' generation.
Okay.
It's really funny because I think our grandparents did the courting, right? They really did, they did a lot of like chasing after the female, you know, and wooing her and showing her how much they care. I think our parents, and this is going to sound really pessimistic and kind of cynical, but I think a lot of our parents ended up getting married out of obligation. So I think that there was a lot of like accidental pregnancies in which the man ended up having to step up to the plate, right? Because now he has to be a father, and then he ended up taking on, I think about like Al Bundy, like you end up having to like take on a job, you know, to support a family.
Did you just bring married with children into this conversation?
It's a relationship podcast, and we're talking about married with children, yes. You know, where you end up having to get a job out of obligation to needing to take care of your family, right? And so a lot, and it's what I personally love about that generation is that while I don't know that everybody was initially in love with one another, mm-hmm. I think they all grew to love one another and learned how to keep a family together, even despite not amazing circumstances having brought the family together. Mm. There's a lot of fight in that generation and in those relationships. And I think that that is something that's just really amazing. Again, I think, you know, our grandparents like loved one another, right? Your grandparents have been together for like 70 years or something uh-huh. like that. Plus, it's like yeah. insane, right? You know, so there was a lot of love. They still love one another. They're still together. Like, they still hold hands. They like, there was a lot of, like, I've known you my whole life kind of thing. And, mm-hmm. like, I want to be with you. Whereas our parents, I feel, was like, oh, met this really great girl out one night. You know, we ended up dating for a little bit, kind of got her pregnant, and just knew I needed to, like, be with her for the rest of my life because... you know, you don't just get a girl pregnant and go away kind of thing like that. Like, you know, you kind of have to stick around and learn and love one another and figure things out together with one another. And I like a lot of that. And again, there's a part of, I know what I just said that sounds somewhat cynical, but I'm not really saying, I don't mean for it to sound cynical so much as I'm just kind of pointing out the desire to learn to love one another and build something around a circumstance, which is very admirable in my eyes.
Yeah. And I think too, that the previous generation, I wouldn't say they normalized divorce, but they were definitely the generation that had to date after divorce. And I think that was a new thing for them, sort of navigating those waters. Not that divorce completely didn't exist, but it was extremely uncommon prior to this last generation, prior to the baby boomers. And so I think about that too, about like the rule breaking there and the, you know, sort of what that looks like. And this idea that some people have that like they'll never get married again and that is no longer the goal. And it makes me wonder if like that's not what's going on with the current generation, is just seeing that and going, I don't really need to worry about marriage right now.
So what I think what happens with the younger generation, so what our generation, we have the examples of parents, we either have the examples of parents not being together and just not necessary, and either wanting to have that happily ever after because it's something that we wanted to chase after, or being like, you know what, it's just probably not for me. I think the generation younger than us has set their priorities completely different. So again, for them, it's not having children at a young age and, you know, starting a family, doing all those things. It's doing your life and getting your life together and then finding out if there's a person that fits into all of that at the same time.
Yeah. And it's like I was saying before, like, I think it's dangerous to say they don't believe in marriage because they're not quite of the marrying age just yet. But I do think that the difference is that, you know, this concept of dreaming of your wedding day, like that's not so much a thing anymore.
Well, no, I think that we're no longer defined by our marriages, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think back in the day, I say back in the day, but it's like maybe 20 years ahead of me. But, you know, during that time period, baby boomers, et cetera, like they were defined by their marriage, right? Your family cared about how many grandchildren you were popping out for your mom. Like that was important, you know. Religion had a lot to do with it. Like, mm-hmm. if you weren't procreating, then you weren't doing God's work. And those things were like really challenging. And again, men knew that for them to be defined in their role as a breadwinner and as, you know, the person that took care of a family, like that meant that you had to work hard, but you kept creating children and you kept your wife happy. That's where that whole stupid happy wife, happy life saying came from, right? Like all of that, those things started happening. And again, I just think that now with us, I think we're the partnership generation where we wed out of like a partnership where it's like very 50-50 and like things are good. And then I think the generation below us are, I'll figure it out when I'm done living my life the way I want to. Like I think about my sister and her boyfriend, and she's talking about like not getting married until like 28, 29. She's 22 years old, right? Like she will be with her boyfriend for like 10 years before they even start thinking about getting married with one another. And that's her choice.
Right.
Not his, you know? And so it's just kind of crazy. If they get married, we don't know. I mean, no pressure on the situation, but if they get married, you know? So I just think that generationally we are just looking at things different. But again, one of the things I love about the older generation is that they have kind of, I've said it before on the podcast, like my mom and dad may not like each other all the time, but they love each other. Mm-hmm. And that fight that they have to stay with one another is what I learned about relationships, because I learned that you don't necessarily have to. I'm fortunate because I do love you and I do like you as well. But I also have found that, you know, you're not going to like each other every day. And it's going to bed and then waking up and trying to like each other the next day. And if it doesn't work that day, you go to bed and you try it again the day after that. And you just keep fighting for that because it's what you wanted and what you've decided for your life and how you want things to go. And I really admire that. I really enjoy that.
Well, and I think that might be one of the lessons that comes from the previous generation and the dating after being divorced, is like that really hard lesson to learn. I think that's where the sort of schism is created for the two generations, right? So my grandparents, you know, they will never get divorced. They would never have gotten divorced. Like that's, like, you don't have sex outside of marriage. You don't get divorced. Those are both sins. And then you have their children, and their children experienced divorce. And then they had to, like, sort of, like, run this new territory and say, like, this is, like, I'm actually having to say what I want and figure it out for the first time. And I think that showed us how important that is. And so I think that's why our generation sort of delayed getting married on average a lot more. I don't know what the statistics actually are. I don't know if the marriage rates, you know, the weighted marriage rates were lower for our generation or not. But I wouldn't be surprised to find out that they were lower, not just later, but lower overall.
Yeah, I think waiting and figuring out who you are, right? Because what is the saying? Like, you, there's going to be like four different iterations of you throughout your 20s. Right. Like you become like four different people throughout your 20s. And it's not until you're like finally like 28, 29 that you become who you're going to be for the rest of your life. And
I've never heard that.
Yeah. There's like maybe it's something that I overheard. I don't know. But, you know, getting married towards the end of your 20s is not a bad idea because, again, you've gone through all of the phases. You've seen all of the things. You've done all of the things. You've made all of the stupid mistakes. You've gotten smarter over the time period. Like, you've learned about you. You know who you are. You know what you want. You know what you will and will not accept out of life, out of a person, out of a family member. Like, you know all of those things. So getting married later in life means you don't have to learn those lessons. You can just enjoy the person that you're with, because they're somebody that you chose. And I think that that's interesting. I think about 25-year-old me versus, you know, now 34-year-old me. And we were young when we met. And the way that we were, and I mean, I can only speak for myself. But, you know, the mentality that I had when I even got into the relationship was not the same mentality that I have right now.
No, me either.
It's not the same mentality. Like, I was still ready to go out and have fun and be out and about. And now I'm more like, I just want to be with my husband. Like, why not just be with this person? Like, I don't want to go to a nightclub. Like, I don't like that stuff anymore. But 25-year-old me wanted to be in every nightclub, you know? So there was just different versions of who I was as a person. And I like this version better, but I'm thankful for the version that I went through to become this person, because you need those things. And so, you know, to try to bring it all the way around, I say that, you know, it's kind of getting married later in life has its benefits. It has its benefits because you get to finally find out who you are as a person.
So what do you think the previous generation did when it came to dating that was a positive thing?
Well, again, as I was saying, like grandparents, I think they courted. I think they
really... No, the previous generation, not the previous before that.
You mean like the baby boomers?
Yeah.
Like our parents?
Yeah.
With dating, I would guess I would say that they, I don't really know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know. Like, I think there was a lot of experiencing of things together that was really cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, you know, because they were like, you know, meeting and hanging out in like the 60s and the 70s and things like that, you know, like there was just a lot of like life experiencing together, you know, they were finding each other in these great things. I think that our families have a really great, I can't speak for everyone, but I think that like our parents knew how to talk to one another and knew how to understand one another because they had kind of been through hell and back with one another. And I liked that. I don't know so much that there's anything during the dating phase that I'm like in love with, but I can tell you the relationship part of it. I loved the fight. I loved the fight for one another. I loved how tumultuous the relationships were. Hmm. They were like, they weren't pretty. They weren't fairy tales. they weren't like, you know, in a fairy tale book, you know,
I don't know that any ever were.
I look at your grandparents' story and it seems so fairy tale, right? It seems so fairy tale. Like they, you know, they love each other. They've loved each other. They're still into each other. They like can't do anything without one another. But then I look at like your aunt and uncle, for example, who like got into relationships initially. Both of them were not good relationships. And then they, you know, like had children from them and then ended those relationships and then they found one another, right? Mm-hmm. And even their now relationship is not always like roses and unicorn farts, but it is definitely, you know, they still love each other, so they know how to fight for one another and they know how to like, you know, dig deep and still like be there for each other when it really matters.
And well, I think that's what it is for me, is there's an honesty. Sure. There's a gritty honesty that is a feature, I think, of that generation, because they had to fight between tradition and reality, or tradition in the future, maybe. And so there is a there's a balance there that I really admire, which is there's a wisdom. You know, there's a, yeah, this is foolish love, but here's how you make it work. You know, like that's what I see in that generation.
I think there was a lot of proving your parents wrong kind of thing like that. So there was like a lot of angst that was going on from that. Like you were trying to like, your parents were trying to dictate your life and you were trying to be rebellious behind it, right? So then,
do you think that's indicative of that generation, or is that just the age regardless of the generation?
I think it has a lot to do with that generation. Yeah, I think that they were just doing things differently. Like, they were just, again, they were doing things differently. I think our grandparents were, like, you know, finding young love, going to the military, right? Then coming back home, and then they were starting their lives. And I think our parents, for the most part, I can't speak for all of them, are, like, working class citizens, right? They were getting regular schmegular jobs, you know. And again, I just think about people like Al Bundy. You know, he was a shoe salesman, like, and he was just trying to make it work for his family. And again, didn't always love Peg, or I'm sorry, didn't always like Peg, but he loved her. He could have left her at any point in time, but that would have just not been okay for either one of them. They still fought for each other. Now, that's what I think about when I think about, like, that generation and, like, how they did those things. Like, and you saw that on TV, right? That was the TV relationship.
The conflict with the love at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah.
And I thought that, I mean, and again, I just really, you know, as a kid who grew up in front of a TV, not necessarily all day, every day, but I watched a lot of television. Mm-hmm. Anybody can quiz me on theme songs. I win, I promise. But yeah, I, you know, you watch TV, that was a lot of it, right? It was always like the galoot of a man, the somewhat level-headed woman. Then they, you know, bickered back and forth with one another. But at the end of the episode, they like rounded it out and they got the family together and they enjoyed a meal together.
And they shared a moment. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it was always good. So I feel like that's what that generation taught me, is that, again, it's not always going to be pretty. Mm. It's not always pretty. Our relationship's not always pretty. Sometimes you piss me off and vice versa But at the end of the day, there's nobody else that I want to be with, like nobody else that I want to be with. So we'll figure it out. We'll have our moments of bickering and then we'll ask each other what we want to eat and then we'll snuggle together and go to sleep. Like it's
and
just
be stronger for it.
Yeah. And it's just going to be what it's going to be. And that's what taught me. What about you?
It's like I said, it's that balance. It's that, you know what it is? It's the ability to make mistakes. That's what I like about them. A lot of them got it right the second time around, or even the third. Very few of them got it right the first time around. And I think that's okay. You know, like I really love my grandparents and how they've been together forever. But I also love the people who like found love later. I think that's just as wonderful. Like, so what? You found it. Like, who cares? Think of all the growth you had, all the opportunities. Think of all the mistakes. Think of all the learning. Like, it's just, it's okay. It takes however long it takes, and it takes as many tries as it takes. And I think they're the generation that paved the way for that to be an okay statement. Mm. And I'm very grateful to them for that.
Yeah. The other thing that I find super fascinating is the amount of love and devotion to their children that exists.
Yes. I will say that's a tradition they didn't break, was the family values.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see, and it's funny because I don't know that I necessarily think it's a family value, because I won't say that my family was traditional. Like, you know, we didn't gather around a dinner table and share stories of our day throughout the day. Like, it wasn't a television show. But I will say that my parents' involvement in our lives was something that I really liked. Like, I tell you all the time, I joke about this, about how my dad used to randomly show up. I would like be going through the halls of school, going on to my next class, and then I would have classmates come up to me and be like, oh, your dad was just in history class, and I was like, I'm sorry, what? And they'd be like, yeah, your dad's in history. And then I would like walk into history and my dad's like, yeah, I'm gonna sit in class today with you to make sure that you're learning everything that you need to learn. And then I was like, but like, mind you, I had like an A in history. Like, you know, like it's not even like I was like doing poorly in history.
Yeah, I don't think I could get away with that. But I definitely, the first time you told me that, I was like, oh, I'm going to do that with my kids.
Yeah, it was so good. And my dad would just do it. He would just be there for the day. And, you know, it was just so neat. And I back then I hated it. It was the worst thing in the world.
I'm sure.
But now I think about, and again, I never really had anything to hide because it's not like I was a poor student, right? But at the end of the day, I loved it because he was involved. My dad was there. And then he would leave my school and then go over to my brother's. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and that would be his, like, and that was his day. Like, he's like, yeah, I got the day off. And, you know, I'm going to spend time in you guys' school to make sure that your teachers are doing what they're supposed to be doing, that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing in class, and that everything's good. Like, and it was just great. And so I think that the devotion and the ability to like be involved in your child's life, like I think that generation did a really great job of like setting the standard for like what it meant to be involved in your child's life. I know you talk all the time about how your mom took so much care about you guys and everything that you and your brother were doing on a consistent basis, you mm-hmm. and your brothers were doing. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And so maybe it's not family values. Maybe it's the value of family.
Sure.
Maybe that's the thing that I think is the important part. But I think that's a great, the connectedness, the importance of each other. I think that's another really great feature.
Yeah.
So
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So that's what I think the difference between the previous generation and the current generation is when it comes to dating and relationships.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's fascinating. I think, you know, as time progresses and I think as we, you know, evolve as generations and, you know, I think I don't know what the next generation is going to be called.
Who knows?
You know, who knows what that's going to be. But I think it's going to be very fascinating to see the impact that we, because we will be grandparents by that time period, like the impact that we've made on those kids, you know, on that generation and how everyone is just doing things differently. I just think it's going to be super fascinating. But the value of a relationship, I think, is always, you know, the underlying important thing. I mean, and we didn't even talk about gays and how gays are affected by all of that. How do you think gays are affected by our parents' relationships?
You know, I don't know that we have enough generations of gays and gay dating to really understand what it is. Because you think about the previous generation, I mean, I know guys who came out in their 60s.
Sure.
You know, so...
Well, what do you think about our heterosexual parents' relationships? How do you think that they've affected our gay relationships?
Oh, I think the same way they've affected the heterosexual ones. I think it's been no different. I think that there's a gap that exists a bit that gets bridged by you as you become more mature. And I think that's not a feature anymore. So, like, you get distanced from heterosexuality, so you distance yourself from some of the values and some of the systems. And I think as you get older, then you learn that, oh no, these are actually the same thing, kind of the point of our podcast, right? And so I think you sort of like fill in those little holes and are like, oh no, that was how it worked because that's how it works, not because they were a heterosexual couple. You know what I mean? But I don't think that there's been enough generations. Like, people are getting raised by gay and lesbian parents now. You know, and that was rare, if completely non-existent, and now it's more and more common. So it'd be interesting to see what that does as well.
Yeah, I will say that I feel like because we saw the traditional male-female, you know, role and the endless love kind of thing, I think a lot of gays do, in the back of their mind, have this fantasy, I don't know, perspective on relationships where they do want to find their prince charmings and the princess charmings or whatever and things like that. I do think that there is a little bit of that. I mean, I think that like you were deeply affected by your grandparents' relationship and seeing that, and you say it to me all the time. Like, even when we go over to their house, you're always like, you know, that's going to be us in the future. Like, there is always this, like, I don't know, beautiful way, this beautiful vision of what a relationship is going to be like. So I do think that gays do tend to be affected by that relationship.
I don't know, because I think that there's a great many gays who have serious issues with relationships and who don't feel worthy for them. And again, I think that's part of the reason for this podcast as well, is to help people understand that they are worthy and that these relationships are healthy and they do deserve them.
So, I mean, of course, and on the other end of the coin, right, there are those heterosexual examples of not very fantastic, but I guess it all depends on what you do with what you've got, right? Because
absolutely,
you know, because you could grow up in a not traditional household where, you know, maybe your father was cheating and you knew it. I'm only blaming the father because that's a typical role, but you could grow up that way, and then you could either grow up and be that same way, or you could grow up and be completely different, right? Mm-hmm. You could be different and say, no, I don't want that for my future. I want to love somebody and be that way. You know, you could grow up where your mother is non-existent and, you know, out partying and drugging and doing whatever, and, you know, your father is staying home with you, and you could want that for your future, right? That's your future. I'm going to be a very involved parent, you know, despite what the other parent is doing. Mm-hmm. Or you could grow up and, you know, be like, oh, I saw mom having fun and that looked like fun to me too. So, you know, I'm going to take mom's route on life. And, you know, there are just ways that you could do it, but it's kind of up to you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that speaks more to resiliency than to heterosexuality or homosexuality. And I think resiliency is pretty universal. So, and it's also pretty rare. But anyway, on that note, why don't we take a little break? And when we come back, we will actually hear from some people firsthand who know what this is like. Hello, listeners. It's Tony. Marco and I can't thank you enough for taking the time to listen to our podcast and for allowing us to be a part of your lives. If you love this show, please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at PodRelationship. Please don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Podable, TuneIn, Spotify, or your Amazon Echo. And while you're there, feel free to rate and review Relationship. Your support is much appreciated. On behalf of Marco and myself, I want to sincerely thank you for listening. And now, back to the show. And we are back.
Oh, Lord. I literally was hoping you wouldn't do that.
It's my thing. So this week, as you know, we're talking about generational differences in dating, courting, talking, whatever you want to call it. And we have two very special guests that I am extremely excited about this week. You may have heard us mention them a time or 10 on the show. With us are my Aunt Mary and Uncle Chuck.
Yay!
So welcome you two.
How are you?
Awesome, thank you.
Good.
Too early to tell.
So this is like a relationship change because instead of having wine, we're having coffee. And it's like early morning at this point too, which is, it's kind of a good thing.
It's unique, but there's a ton of snow and it's a lovely place with great company.
Yeah. We were coming to visit for the holidays and we decided to snatch these two up and create an episode based off of dating habits between the generations.
Right. So what we're going to do, we're going to dive right in. We're going to have you sort of follow the relationship format. So if you could start just by saying, like, who you are, what you do, how you would identify yourself in your relationship. So an example would be, you know, I am a heterosexual, monogamously coupled person who's been married for however long, right? But I want you to do it for each other. So Uncle Chuck, you're going to introduce Aunt Mary. Aunt Mary, you're going to introduce Uncle Chuck. Ladies first.
Can you handle that?
Okay. Talking about the ladies, or
so I'm speaking for him.
You're right? Introducing Uncle Chuck. Yep.
Okay, so this is Uncle Chuck. He is a heterosexual male who is 60 years old.
Thank you.
Yo.
Thank you.
You made it.
62.
The 60 was better.
And he has been married to his wife for 25 years.
Wow.
And what does Uncle Chuck do?
And Uncle Chuck is a IT guy.
I like that. That's what we're usually called, just the IT guy.
There you go. And Uncle Chuck, who is this fine lady sitting next to you?
This is Mary Christopher. This is my wife of 25 years. She is, I can't remember all those words. She's straight.
And boy, is she good at it.
Yes. And she works as a logistics coordinator.
Nice. 25 years together.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
It's rough. for her.
Lots of wine, right?
Yeah. No, you know what? It's lots of love. It's lots of love. It's a lot of commitment.
It's fun.
It's fun. It is fun.
One of the reasons why we really wanted to talk to you guys, as we've shared with you many, many times, is Tony and I look at your relationship and your marriage, and we're always like, oh, hashtag goals right there. Like, we literally want that. Like, we love that. And you guys have so much fun together, and you guys experience and explore things together with one another, and there is just a lot of love. I'm sure there's a lot of headache, but there's also just a lot of patience and kindness and fun that is had between both of you. And it's so inspirational. And we love, absolutely love seeing that. How did it all begin? How did you guys meet one another?
So we met.
I know this story.
Then tell it, please. We'd like to hear.
We met. This is a second marriage for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck used to work with my sister. And we were both dating somebody at the time. And my sister said, got this guy that I work with, and you got to meet him. You two would be perfect together. We were both dating people, and so Uncle Chuck, being the good man that he is, said, well, I can't meet her until I end the relationship I'm in. And so he did that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were a blind date.
Now, wait, did you end that relationship specifically to meet Mary? Or did you wait till that relationship ended and then said, okay, now I'm ready to meet Mary?
The second one, yes.
The second one. Okay. All right, so you let it run its course.
Right,
okay.
Right.
And so, blind date. I hadn't seen a picture of him. He hadn't seen a picture of me. And we we met at a bar restaurant. And when I got there, I was really nervous about it. So I had a couple glasses of wine at my girlfriend's house first, because I'd never done this before. I'd never did a blind date. And when I got there, Uncle Chuck was waiting outside, leaning up against the brick building.
For stability, we now know. The klutz gene runs deep in my family. Please continue.
Yes.
So we introduced ourselves and went into the bar.
For a quick drink.
About 9 o'clock at night. And we were there until 2 in the morning.
Wow. Mm.
Conversation never stopped. And we saw each other every single day from that night on.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Is right. Yeah. That's exactly. Yeah.
It's kind of funny because that's a little bit of what our story is like. We had met.
It's almost exactly the same.
We had met each other online, but we never met each other. We talked on the phone a little bit, but then we went to a bar and met each other and had drinks, and we ended up hanging out for like 5 hours mm-hmm. at the bar. And just ended up like connecting, and then we were together ever since then.
Mm-hmm. That's literally with an occasional break.
Well, I'm talking about the beginning, the inception of it, but it was great. That's awesome. That's an amazing story.
I love it.
I never knew that story.
Yeah.
And the problem was is that her sister knew me for 2 years before she introduced us.
Wow. So, man, timing's everything.
We could be 27 years into it.
That is a very valid point.
But you're 25. I love it.
That's amazing. So 25 years together, that's, again, a great story. And because this episode is a little bit about, like, generational dating and everything, what would you say? I mean, because you, Mary, your daughter, your stepdaughter, Chuck, just got married.
Mm-hmm. And also, Uncle Chuck, you have several children who are married.
Who are married and things. So if you were to sum up the difference in dating styles and how this generation or even generations younger than ours dates versus how you guys dated, what would you say about it?
I think very different. And Tony, in the beginning, when you mentioned courting
mm-hmm.
and dating and talking, mm-hmm. the very first thing for me that struck me was when we dated, it was literally courting,
mm-hmm.
right? We the first 2 weeks that we dated, he literally courted me.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more than a kiss on the cheek at the end of the night. Very much a gentleman. We courted, we dated, we talked on the phone all the time. I look at the younger generation and it's more talking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even talking, right? It's texting.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at like Alicia and Kyle and so much of
and that's your daughter and her husband.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So much of their relationship was texting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they got to know each other, because Kyle wasn't living here. He was living in New York. So it was a long distance relationship and they didn't spend a lot of time on the phone. So it was very different style. But I see that with all of the kids in that generation.
Mm-hmm. More
that
of this generation. More, yep.
Right. It's
lot,
more,
lot
it's more talking, talking
yeah.
versus courting and dating.
Mm-hmm. Do you think our generations move faster or slower in the dating scenario than what you guys did?
Much faster.
Yes.
Much faster, I
agree.
Think.
Although we can't speak to that because we
met. You were pretty fast.
And
yeah.
we got married
Eight months almost to the day later.
8 months later. But again, in a second marriage and kind of knew what you wanted.
For sure. Yeah. And because I do think that that's a little bit, I mean, I personally think it's a little bit different because, again, your first marriage is you were like, not so much what I wanted. But the second one, you come around and you're like, yep, that's what I've been looking for. And so I'm right. Good. So that does happen a little bit faster. But sometimes I think that like the physicality, I mean, without getting into detail, but I think that this generation physically moves a little bit quicker than older generations. Do you guys have any thoughts about that?
Because of the era that I'm from, I agree. I think sometimes it's too fast, and I think that that adds, it changes a relationship. So if you haven't really gotten to know each other, I think it, A, makes it less special, and B, more complicated.
Sure. Yeah, because emotions get attached to things. You can say it's just sex if you want, but emotions get attached to things and, you know, and they may not be attached to the most appropriate person.
Exactly. Well,
and then sometimes you make the mistake of enjoying the physical and not actually building anything on like the emotional or the levels and stuff like that, right?
I like that.
Right.
So you put so much weight on feeling good physically as opposed to feeling good like in your heart or in your brain, right? Like you end up seeing all these things that don't actually exist
right.
in the relationship because you're just having fun physically and it just makes it a little bit more complicated.
I wonder, Uncle Chuck, what was there anything that you were specifically taught about dating? Like, did your family, did your siblings, did any people teach you, did school talk to you about like what that's supposed to look like? Or did you have to come to that on your own?
I think you have to come to it on your own. They can push a lot of stuff down your throat or whatever, but I think you have to come to that on your own. And we remember, we come from a much stricter generation. So there wasn't even allowed to let's go up in our room and do our homework together or anything like that. That was never allowed. So it's just, I can think of so many things that would take up probably 5 years shows. It's just so different from back then versus today.
I believe it, you know, and it's funny that you mentioned that because when I was growing up, like we weren't allowed to have our bedroom doors closed.
Right.
No, you know, nobody of the opposite sex was allowed in our bedroom. Like that was like not a thing. But that's a great question that you just asked because I don't know.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know if my dad taught us anything about dating. I don't know if that was ever like a lesson that you learned about dating.
Well, and there's this great research that's going on now, and there's a bunch of these sort of genius grants that are being given out, and a lot of them are looking at education reform and like how we relate to each other in particular in dating is they're really strongly suggesting that that becomes part of the coursework in public schools. And I think it's worthwhile because like we're all different generations and I was never taught like this is what respect means. This is what respecting someone else versus yourself means. This is, you know, dating can look all these different ways. Here's the natural consequences of your choices and you can make whatever choices you want. And we're not endorsing anyone in particular. Like that just doesn't exist. And I don't think it has. And so I think that's part of the reason why you see like all these different rules, all this different progression. And it is, it's very different for you. You couldn't like, would you have gotten in trouble if you were holding hands? If your parents saw you holding hands with somebody?
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Oh, I would have.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Especially as a girl.
And I mean, isn't there, like even from the very beginning, isn't there like a permission that needs to be granted? You know?
For you, yeah.
Because a lot of things are like super formal, right? There's like the chivalry, right?
Right.
Being chivalrous is a part of the dating cycle, you know, opening car doors and opening doors and pulling out chairs
and paying
right, and things like that is huge. Did you ask her father for her hand in marriage?
Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes, I did.
It's so like even those things, I don't know if it's traditional
to you, Aunt Mary.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And when my daughter got married, I expected the same from Kyle. Never said that to him, but expected the same from Kyle, and he did.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Kyle is literally a completely different breed of guy in general. He's a really good guy that does have a lot of, like, old worldly values and things like that. He is a really good guy. But it was funny because I told Tony...
you and I talked about it.
Yeah, because Tony...
Because I was going
to
do it.
Tony wants to be traditional and really cared about, you know, asking, you know, if it was okay to get married. And I was like, I don't need that. I love my parents and I love that he wanted to do that, but it's not my parents' responsibility to say yes or no. It's okay for me to be given, like, to marry. So don't ask them because I don't care. Like, I just don't. Like,
I'm glad you all were sitting down when you heard Marco had a strong opinion.
Yeah. Right. I was like, I just that doesn't matter to me because at the end of the day, if I want to be married to you, like, it's going to come from me. I don't need my family to like sign off on it.
Right. For me, it's more of a formality.
Sure.
Because I agree with you. If my father would have said no, I would have said, well, thank you for that, but I'm doing it.
I appreciate it. Do it anyways. And I get it.
And that was going to be my question is what would happen if the answer was no?
Right.
Yeah.
But of course, I mean, again, those were values that were kind of instilled in the dating life, right?
Right.
So
right.
You ended up you wanted it just because it's what you
knew. Remember.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Right. And I wanted it from this generation too, for my daughter, as I wanted Kyle to ask me, because for me, I think besides the formality, it's a respect. It's a respect thing.
Sure. Mm. I mean, I think the underlying message there, though, is that despite what we may think, there is still elements of tradition that trickles down from the generations. Right. There's still
Absolutely.
Elements of it. Even
I hope
if,
so.
Even if these new millennials or and you know our generation tried to fight against it, there are still things that were pushed into our head that we still care about and still matter at some point in time. Again, because my husband wanted to do that,
right?
But I was the one that was like, "No, we're not gonna."
Well, and there are other parts of it too that become modernized and translated. I mean, of course, we can't ignore where that comes from, right? Because it used to be woman as property, and you were actually making a business deal. But it's become something better, right? And even more modernized. Like some people ask the children if it's okay to marry their parent. Mm-hmm. Did either of you do that or have a conversation saying this is what we're going to do? Or did you just announce it?
No, it was just announced. But by that time, the kids gotten to know both of us.
So you had already blended
well,
a bit.
We tried.
Introduced.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And so, yes, I mean.
After 8 months.
Well, we were married after 8 months.
Right. But after 8 months, during that 8 month course, the children definitely got to know each other quite well. So it was kind of like, yay, Chuck and Mary are getting married, or Daddy and Mary are getting married, or Mom or Chuck are getting married, whatever.
Right.
Right. Right.
Mm.
That's very, I'm so fascinated. So between Chuck and Mary, you guys have eight kids?
Seven kids.
Seven kids. It's super. So two for Mary and then five for Chuck.
Yeah.
Which is, it's incredible. And I always joke and I'm like, oh, you guys' Brady Bunch is like so, it's so, I don't know. They're fun. It's fun. It's hectic. But
trying
it's,
at times. Yeah, it's very trying at times.
But it's well, so fascinating.
And it is one family. But I think it's an important distinction to make too, is that Uncle Chuck, you took on some of those children. They're not actually biologically yours.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So from your first marriage, you have two children, right? So two of those five, they're your children. They are this family's children. They are a part, like, but I just think it's so interesting. And I think that's part of what really fascinates me or makes me respect you, is that you did that. You took them on. They weren't really your responsibility, but you felt that they were, and you've raised them their whole lives
since
that point. Yep. And they're around all the time, and it's not any different.
Right, right.
And I think that's just really wonderful. That doesn't have anything to do with dating or the generation. I think it just speaks to the awesomeness that is you.
That is, yeah. So I kind of want to switch gears a teeny bit, and I want to know... Chuck and Mary individually, 25 years together, what would you say is the secret to making a marriage? Because this marriage is longer than your first marriages.
Mm-hmm.
So what would
Combined.
You
Combined.
So what would you say is the secret to making this marriage last? And, you know, God willing, right? It's going to last even another 25 years, right? Mm-hmm. So, or even more than that, right? But like, what is the secret?
For me, I would say deep down, a love for me I've never felt before. Not that that always makes it easy, but because of that love, I am willing to do whatever I need to do to make it work. I have learned so much from him because we're very different personalities. So I have learned patience. I have learned kindness, although I'm not there 100% like him. But he's taught me a lot. So as different as we are, like you alluded to earlier, we are very similar. We love to do the same things. We keep ourselves active. And we always did, even when we were first married. And that was a big task, blending the families, having all the kids together, which what we were fortunate with was we had all of the kids together every other weekend, but then every other weekend, it was just us, which was necessary because we were still learning about each other and our relationship was still growing. And it's hard to do that when you have a house full of children that you're, you know, running here and running there and you lose yourselves.
Sure.
And so we didn't. And so we learned the things that we loved to do when we did them. And now we get to do that all the time, all the time.
That's amazing. I love it. What about you?
Ditto. I don't know. I'm just not used to this, and I don't even feel like for me I've had to try it all. There's been no trying whatsoever going on. I haven't thought about, okay, what next shall we talk about? I even say to her, and I continue to say this after all this time, I love you more every day. And it's that song, but not as much as tomorrow. I mean, that's what comes in your head, and that's the way it is. It's just I have no idea why we have found each other and love to do everything each other loves to do. It just happened, and I think we just got lucky. We just got real lucky, and then after we got lucky, we worked.
And you guys can't see it right now, but Mary, God love her, is a very emotional person, and she just feels so strongly, and it's so amazing, and I just love seeing the tears from your eyes, because I know it is a deep and passionate love. Like, I know you do love him so very much, and it's so amazing to see that. I love how you feel. I love that. I think it's like incredible. And it's just special. It's super special.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
It's absolutely beautiful.
Again, it's something that we aspire to.
You are beautiful.
Hey, it's beautiful. Something that we aspire to. So let's switch gears again so that we can be a little bit more lighthearted and fun. You guys have so many adventures. You guys literally like explore the world in such an amazing way. And I just love seeing that. And I always tell Tony, I'm like, if your aunt and uncle can hop on a plane and go to Italy, then we can do it too. What, of all of the adventures that you guys have shared together with one another, what has been your favorite so far?
Well, we've never even talked about that.
Right.
We have never even talked about that.
And you know what is amazing as Italy was? And so it was amazing in a different way because you're there to see things and do things and explore the world. But for me, my favorite things are when we do our little weekend getaways. And we go shopping to the little stores in the town. And we stop at a brewery and we do a tasting. And remember the one time we went and we tasted too much and we had to sit in the car and drink water before we could go forward.
And just
taking that, you know, just going away for little weekends, just spending time together in a different place, in a room and relaxing and just, it doesn't have to be big.
Mm.
Just like you said, those little adventures and that little bit of exploring, and as beautiful as Italy was, my favorite thing to do was those little weekends away.
That was going to be my guess.
Yeah. You have to fit so much into a small weekend, so it almost feels like it's bigger than...
It's concentrated, right? Yeah, right. Very concentrated and dense, and it's really cool.
Well, and you also, you do like a several times a week, or at least once a week, where you all just go out and like appetizers and drinks,
yeah,
just to go out,
yep.
You know,
yep.
And you have your spots that you love. So you have your canal, right? And you just moved to this new area, and so you're finding things. And even last night, we were talking about this is 6 minutes away, and that's 6 minutes away.
Right.
We were trying to decide on a place to go for brunch because we love brunch.
The gays love a good brunch.
We sure do. And it was, no, I haven't seen that one. Oh, I've heard of that one. Oh, let's try that one. So, I mean, that's the part that I like, is the way to like weave it into the everyday and still make it special and regular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tony and I are, that's kind of like the next phase of our
life. Yeah, we're working
life.
On that.
That's something that we're working on because
we need to pay more attention to
it. We got kind of lazy.
We got ruddish. We got routine.
Yeah. And so because of that, we order food into our home all the time. But I was telling, you know, Tony, like,
for the same price, you can go out.
We can go out and have an adventure and check something out instead of sitting on our couch all the time and doing it. Like, let's just go out and check these things out and these places. And we live in an amazing neighborhood, and there's so many cool new things that are popping up. Why is it that we haven't experienced them firsthand? Why are we waiting for the Seamless guy to come and deliver it for us? You know,
cut that check.
Yeah, I know, right? So we just want to be able to adventure. But I always say, like, your aunt and uncle, they explore everything. Like, they see all these things. Like,
you know, you're a great example.
We should definitely be doing a lot more of that. What about you, Chuck? Is there any other adventure that you have had with Mary that makes you smile when you think about it?
Believe it or not, I'm going to go all the way back to our honeymoon, because that's where our adventures all began. And we laughed and we laughed and we laughed on our whole, you know, we just had such a good time. We went to one of those resorts like you did, mm-hmm. Okay? A whole week of being pampered. And we spent so much free time even going off the beaten track a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And we just had so much fun, and I cannot... We just laughed. We had a wonderful week together. Taught her how to play backgammon.
Yeah.
We danced every night. We just had a great time.
That's the other thing I'm trying to get Tony to do. You got all the dancing genes. I can't get him. I can't get... He doesn't dance.
The ongoing joke is that I am Uncle Chuck's son, but I did not inherit that gene.
No. I'm always like...
White boy rhythm.
I'm like... Totally. I'm like, come on, come dance with me. And he's like, I can't dance to the song. I don't like the song. I'm like, stop thinking about the song and think about the beat. Like, dance to the beat, not the song.
And then I'll try it and he'll go, what beat do you hear?
The same one as everybody else.
We've had those conversations before too, yes.
Yes.
It's fun. I love that. We had an amazing adventure together, the four of us. Well, it was technically five of us.
Because Stevie was
little
there.
Sister was there as mm-hmm. well. But the five of us went to...
Aunt Mary, where did we go?
Topia Inn.
Oh, yes, yeah!
There you go. But I had to think about it.
For the longest time, she was calling it the Topia.
We took a trip to the Berkshires and stayed in this amazing bed and breakfast with the most amazing showers and beds.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we just sat up and laughed and hung out. And
we took over that place. Oh, by the way, cut that check.
I know.
We took over that place and a small chunk of the town.
Yes. Yeah, we had a real good... I still think about that trip to McDonald's, and we're randomly getting chicken nuggets and all that stuff like that.
Oh, I still... and everybody at McDonald's loved us.
Oh, God, we
but
were...
But they didn't want us to leave, but I still remember walking down the street and being like, oh, yeah, that's not the side of the tracks we're going to be on. We're going to go this way.
Right.
Walked to the liquor store. Do you remember
yes.
that?
Though?
We took that walk to the liquor store. Oh, that scary liquor store yes. with the guy out front.
Yeah. Yes. And then we just sat on the patio and literally the balcony. What is it called?
No, it was a porch.
A portico.
It was actually a portico.
A portico. There you go.
My favorite feature of a colonial house.
And we sat and we drank wine. I know, right? Sat and drank wine and laughed and
talked.
Chatted. And
did we even play games? I don't think we busted out the games.
Did.
We just talked.
We had to. But that's kind of what's fun about the dynamic of this relationship in general, is that we don't really need a lot. We just need us, and we can all laugh and joke and have a good time without modern technology sometimes.
Or distractions.
Or distractions of any kind. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, again, relationship exclusive. You heard it here first. Next year, they're coming to Punta Cana with us.
We had to put it in the podcast so that we could hold you guys to it.
You heard it here first.
It's become a tradition for us and for Marco and I to go back to where we initially honeymooned. And we went back and we had a group, and it was great. And Aunt Mary and Uncle Chuck couldn't make it, and this year coming up, they're making it.
That's the plan. Absolutely.
Because well, it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be so much fun. You guys are going to love it. That's all the time we have for right now. You guys are incredible.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. And just for the record, and you two know this, you are two of our most favorite people. Seriously, just adore you. Adore you.
Ditto.
Thank you
so much. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
The feeling is mutual.
Yeah. You guys mean the world to us, and we love spending time with you, and we're always so sad when we don't get to or when there's too much time in between it, but... thank you guys for doing this with us. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's always fun. I always say really quickly before we get off here, it's always fun to bring up those memories of the intense love that existed way back when, right? Mm-hmm. Chuck, I love that you said that your favorite adventure was your honeymoon, right? Mm-hmm. And your face just lit up when you were talking
about
it.
And it hasn't stopped beaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. It was amazing. No, because then you like literally go back to that time, right? You go mm-hmm. back and you think about it and you're like, that was really cool. And I think everyone should goal themselves to reminisce on those intense moments and try to bring them forward into the current moments, because that's exactly how you make that love even stronger. Awesome. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a minute. Again, thank you guys for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, listeners. We are here to present a fun opportunity to you.
Do you know of a queer couple that you want us to feature on the show?
If so, send an email to relationshipquestions@gmail.com.
Or tag us on social media at @podrelationship.
Tony and I may feature this couple on one of our episodes.
We want to thank you for joining us each week and for helping to make this podcast the success that it is.
We are going to get back to the show, but we look forward to connecting with each and every one of you.
And we look forward to highlighting more of these queer relationships that you love.
Enjoy the rest of the show.
Bye! And now it's time for our listener situations.
That's right. Send your relationship questions or comments to relationshipquestions@gmail.com. Tony and I will read your emails here on the show and do our best to give some guidance, because they can say it all sounds crazy. They can say I've lost my mind. I don't care if they call me crazy. We can live in a world that we design. Hit it.
Okay.
No? Because every night I lie in bed, the brightest colors fill my head. A million dreams are keeping me awake.
If you all could see the faraway look he just gave.
I love it. If you guys haven't noticed, Tony and I are really big fans of The Greatest Showman.
Kind of obsessed.
It's kind of our, like, I literally walk into the apartment just about every single night and you have it playing on YouTube like some primitive being, instead of using Apple Music for whatever reason.
other monosyllabic expressions of arrogance.
It's not even arrogance. It's just normal. like, good Lord almighty. I don't care if you were using Spotify or Tidal. Like,
but not YouTube.
Or like using YouTube. Like a weirdo. Anyways.
I feel like I need to be scraped off your shoe.
If you have a scraper.
Lord.
So, no, it's just we love it so much. And they have just recently released the Reimagined album.
Well, starting to release it one song
so
at a time.
So amazing.
It's good.
I love it so much.
It is good. I still like the original better. All right.
I like them both equally.
Not me. Okay.
Hater.
Not hater. Just hater. I know my aesthetic. Mm. And I like
you
musicals.
Have an aesthetic?
I do.
That's a recent development. Continue.
Email number one. Asshole. Hi, Tony and Marco. My name is Jason, and I live in Connecticut. Oh, you're our neighbor.
My husband and
far
I...
Far away neighbor.
Not that far. My husband and I have been married for 11 years. Oh, congratulations. Recently, we've been having some problems with staying connected to each other. Every night when we have dinner together, I find myself bored with what he is telling me. Stop it, Marco. He's
just being honest.
That's
so interesting.
Just okay. being honest.
Continue.
There's that judgment again.
That's not judgment. I'm just like, wow, I wasn't expecting that.
In fact, I'm starting to notice that I'm coming up with excuses not to sit at the table at the same time that he does. I'm not sure what happened to us. We used to be so totally into each other. Maybe it's because he has had the same job the entire time I've known him. Maybe it's me and I'm not able to spark something interesting for us to discuss at the dinner table. I don't know, but at my wit's end. You guys always give great advice, and I could really use your help. Thanks in advance, Jason. Wow. Well, Jason?
I think it's just interesting that you base the only conversations that you guys are able to have with one another on work. Like, what does your... he's had the same job, so that's the only thing that you guys are able to talk about? Like, you don't talk about other things? Like, I'm sure you're more than just... each other and work, right? Like, you don't just go to work and then that's the only conversation you have forever and always, right? Like, that's...
I would hope not.
Right? I'm sure you read something. I'm sure you talked to someone. I'm sure you saw something during the course of your day.
I'm sure you have similar interests that you can share. I'm sure you have different interests that you can educate each other on.
Sure. So I just think that that's really interesting that the whole basis of your ability to converse with one another relies on his job and whether or not it's boring. That's really interesting to me.
So I have a thing I like to share sometimes with people. So it's called the 5-minute rule, and normally it's only used for people who are negative, but I'm going to apply it to boring in this case since it sounds like you're bored. So 5 minutes, you get 5 minutes to tell me about your day, and then we're going to talk about something else, and use those 5 minutes well. Or it could be 10 minutes if you don't want to cut your husband off. But we're only going to talk for 10 minutes because your job is not something that is really stimulating, right? And you don't have to say that. You can just sort of keep it sort of, you know, try to keep it for you and your boundary.
I think it's fair to say your job, you're more than your job. And mm-hmm. I just don't want to spend our entire dinner talking about your job all night.
So we can talk for 10 minutes about this, and then we're or 5 or whatever, and then we're going to talk about other things. And if after we talk about those other things, you want to talk about your job some more, I'm definitely going to listen. Conversely, I will say that there's this great thing out there that says love is listening about you, listening to your partner's day even when you've had a rough one. So you listen to them first. Even though you have something to say, love is listening to them first. And, you know, I heard a maybe in your sentence, the maybe it's you piece. Maybe bring that part back to the forefront about making it more about your partner. Doesn't mean you shouldn't get your needs met. Again, this is just one of a couple of things that you could try. But I would definitely suggest that. And then maybe, I don't know what your commute home looks like. We have some time on ours because we're not the ones driving the machinery that gets us home. But maybe during that time, look up something or a few somethings that you think would be interesting to talk about. And maybe make it a game with your husband and just have him do the same thing.
Yeah, I guess more so than anything, at the end of the day, you have to remember that relationships do depreciate. And I know that sounds very morbid, but they do. Relationships depreciate, right? They're like the value of the relationship, that NRE that, you know, Dan Savage talks about all the time, that new relationship energy does tend to fade because it's no longer new and exciting. It's, you know, mundane and can sometimes be slightly monotonous, right? Like there's that aspect of the relationship, but your goal is to find new ways to not make it boring. And that is, I'm a little concerned that you're putting all the value on the work and not the value or the ability to relate to one another on anything else, any other topic or anything else that could possibly be a part of your relationship. So I'm a little concerned that that's all that you guys got, and you may want to look at that. And, you know, to Tony's point, I feel like you guys have the ability to figure other things out and do things and find games, and you can set limits and boundaries on what needs to be talked about. But, you know, sometimes you and I get into this really bad habit where we sit on opposite ends of the couch and I'm social mediaing and you're on your cell phone playing games, and we have a TV going on with one another and we're not relating to one another. And sometimes that's needed, right? Sometimes we just need to decompress in that manner. But if we let that be our thing all the time, every time, that's where the problem is coming in. And I think that you need to understand that sometimes maybe he just needs an ear. Maybe he just needs to vent for a second. And you can give him the ability to vent, much to your point, for 5 minutes. But then after that, we have to talk about something that's related to us that's a little bit more uplifting and fun. Because, you know, sorry, I don't want to spew hate and anger or, you know, annoyance over my hamburger. Like, that's just not something that I want to do. You know, so maybe you do that. But at the same time, I think it's really, really important to make sure that you guys find something else to connect about that has nothing to do with your careers or job or your conversations about that. That's just ridiculous.
Well, and you just gave me an idea, which is, what if you let him talk about his day, but the rule is that you can talk about your day until we sit down to dinner. Sure. And then when we sit down to dinner, we're going to talk about other stuff.
Sure.
So take as much time as you need changing your clothes, decompressing, whatever. We can talk about your day. But when the plates go on the table, it's time to stop.
Yeah, we're talking about RuPaul's Drag Race.
That's a real relationship starter there. It's a good shot in the arm.
Exactly.
All right. Next one. Hey, guys. Quick question. How soon is too soon to let a potential partner know that you suffer from mental health issues? I just met a guy I like and think it could turn into something more, but I'm nervous that my mental health diagnosis could be a red flag for him. We've been on 5 dates and it feels like the right time to tell him, but I'm scared that I waited too long. What should I do? And if I do tell him, when is the right time to do it? Signed, Austin. Well, I'm going to go first on this one.
Why? Because you have a mental health problem.
I do have a mental health problem, and I happen to work in mental health. No soon is too soon, no late is too late. It is your journey, it is your recovery, it is your experience, so the time that's right is for you. We can't deny the stigma that exists with mental health, with mental illness. You know, it's really unfortunate that around the world, people separate physical health from mental health, because it's not. You are one person. This is your whole body. The mental health piece is just as much based in physical diagnostics as it is in anything else, and chemicals, and they don't exist in some ether outside the body. Most of them are in the brain. Some of them are in receptors throughout the nervous system. Like, it's medical. And it's unfortunate. You're right to be scared, because there is a stigma. But there are things that you can do to educate people, right, about the fact that 1 in 4 people has a mental illness. 1 in 4. So it's not uncommon. Mm-mm. Right? You can talk about the treatments and how well they work. You can talk about all that. But I would say that the right time to talk to someone about your mental health diagnosis or your experience of the world or whatever you want to call it,
Should be as soon as you feel comfortable.
Well, it's the same as anything else. When do I feel okay talking intimately about anything with you? Because this is, stigma aside, diagnosis aside, medication aside, science aside, this is your experience of the world. And it's not completely different from everyone else's. There's a lot of people that have a lot of different experiences in common. And whether you have been told that you have borderline personality disorder, or if you have some form of bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder, or, you know, whatever, like it doesn't matter. What matters is what it means to you and what it could potentially mean to your partner. And more importantly, what it means to both of you by you telling them that, which is that you care for them and you see a future together. And so I think that's the important part of that conversation. I do think, too, that you have to do some educating in this because people aren't educated about mental illness and what that looks like, or mental health and what that looks like. And I'm not saying that you should, you know, immediately come prepared with all kinds of handouts from NAMI, although you might. You may, the National Alliance for Mental, you know, against for mental illness, but you want to, you know, you don't have to come that prepared, but at the same time, know that you are working against that. So you may say something like, you know, I have dissociative identity disorder. And people will be like, what? What'd you say? So you need to educate people about what that means, about how it could potentially impact your relationship, what it looks like when you're not well, why you're doing well now, what it could mean to them and what they need to be sensitive to. But you also need to remember that this conversation is just like the sex conversation that people have with their children. It's not a one-time conversation. This is an ongoing conversation.
Well, I think that, I mean, to even simplify, because again, this is what I love about you, because you're so brilliant and you know so much about so much, and that is amazing. But I think just to even simplify that, maybe to the few of us that, like, you know, just don't necessarily know it to the degree that you do, I think that, much to your point, when things become serious, and when other important conversations like your family or your living situation or all those
your
things,
hopes
like that,
and dreams.
Your hopes and dreams, all those things come about, I think that's when you may start having that question, that conversation. Like, that's when you start saying things like, you know, just to give you a quick heads up, it's under control. I'm literally doing really well right now. I'm either medicated or I'm seeing a therapist or I'm managing it in some capacity, but I feel like we're going in a great position at this point. Like, I think that we're going in the great right direction for this relationship, and I think you should know that I am depressed. I suffer from depression. I live with depression. Mm-hmm. And because I am depressed, like, there are a few things that I go through, and it happens at, you know, this point, and sometimes it looks like this and all these other things. And, you know, I wanted to be able to share that with you because I feel like we're in a good way, and I feel like we're going to be in a better way. And I just want to make sure that you know that that's a part of being with me. And that will give them the ability. And look, at the end of the day, and I know it's so easily said, right? You know, at the end of the day, if they can't handle it, then they're not the person that you're supposed to be with. And all of those other Aesop's fables, right? Like, that's like a whole thing. But at the end of the day, it's kind of the truth, right? The person that you're supposed to be with is going to say, wonderful, because guess what? I am bipolar. Like, you know, and it's like it's not a big deal, and I don't really care.
Or they won't be able to relate to your experience at all, but they'll care about you so much that they will figure out a way to learn to.
To figure it out, and that'll be that. And that's all that matters. So at the end of the day, I think it's just necessary to say it when you feel comfortable, and then gauge their response from there. Mm-hmm. And then do that. But no time is too soon and no time is too late, right? So yeah. You just do it when it feels comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. How would you have felt if I told you on the fifth date that I had PTSD?
I don't scare from that stuff, though. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, I would have been like, oh my God, thank you so much. What does that mean? And what does it stem from? I'm an inquisitive person. So for me, I need to understand what I'm dealing with. That's why I don't like secrets or anything like that. I like everything out on the table, because then I know what I'm going to deal with and I can kind of game plan how I'm going to deal with it. But if you spring things on me, then it's really hard for me to, like, figure it out or do it in a very do it in like a pretty way, like, mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to be able to, like, give you the reaction that you want because you sprung it on me. But if you, like, let me know what's going on, then I can, like, take the time and understand and ask the questions and then move from there. But yeah, no, I that would have been fine. I could have handled that.
And I just bring that up to illustrate, like, you never know what your partner's going to do. And unless part of your pattern is picking the wrong people, give yourself credit knowing that you picked someone healthy who is going to be supportive and understanding of you.
Sure. Sure.
All right.
That was a great question.
Yeah, it really was. Thank you so much for that.
For shizzle. Let's take a break. What you say about that?
Let's do. So that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks for tuning in and being a part of this really important conversation.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at PodRelationship. And don't you dare forget to subscribe and rate us. And you know what? You better tell all your friends, bitches.
You can email us at relationshipquestions@gmail.com if you have any situations or comments that you'd like for us to address on the show.
Tony and I will harass your ears next week.
And remember, watch where you walk or you might step in shit.